Drink water from your own cistern, flowing water from your own well. Should your springs be scattered abroad, streams of water in the streets? Let them be for yourself alone and not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice in the wife of your youth. A lovely deer, a graceful doe, let her breasts fill you at all times with delight. Be intoxicated always in her love. Why should you be intoxicated, my son, with a forbidden woman, and embrace the bosom of an adulteress? For a man's ways are before the eyes of the Lord, and he ponders all his paths. The iniquities of the wicked ensnare him, and he is held fast in the cords of his sin. He dies for lack of discipline, and because of his great folly he is led astray. This is a pretty serious warning here, isn't it, to his sons. He gives, as we've seen last week, as we continue to see through these sections, a little bit of a lengthy appeal to open his dialogue, verses 1 and 2, calling him to listen to wisdom, keep wisdom, and guard it. And then he gives this picture of what turns out to be a monster in the end. Tantalizing woman, drip honey, her lips drip honey, her speech is smoother than oil. He says in the end, she's bitter as wormwood, somewhat poisonous sort of terrible tasting substance there, sharp as a two-edged sword, and her visions like this cave that she's in. Her feet go down to death, and her steps follow the path to Sheol. So it starts here, the lips of a forbidden woman, her speech, right? She's attracting not in a like a purely kind of sexual way, but she's kind of giving him these hollow praises, right? These smooth speaking temptations, right? That aren't necessarily just looks, right? She's inflating his ego and his pride, and that's how it starts, isn't it? That's how it so often, I think, tends to go. The temptation isn't just purely animal, but there's many other things involved, like pride and ego, words of comfort, and the allure of the forbidden. But it turns out she's an agent of temptation here, purposely, right? Trying to draw in a prey off the path of life. Okay, she doesn't know the path of life. She doesn't care about that. But instead, she's going to destruction, and she wants to bring him with. Commentator said here that she is the hunter, not the victim. Right, so often in our world, and many times it is true, that it, you know, the victim and the victimized can go both ways, right? And here, this picture is a woman who is intentionally trying to bring the young man into death. But the father warns here of the ruin and disgrace that comes along with giving in. Verse 7, and that through verse 14, there's a degeneration that's going on here. Don't go near her, the warning. But then So often, you know, I think, well, there's lots of different ways that we have the talk with the kids, right? When they're, you know, whatever, 13, 14, 15 years old. This one's an interesting one. Verse 9. the punishment in the Old Testament for adultery was death. Okay? If you were caught in the act, both the man and the woman were to be stoned. But it was also an option. It was slavery. Okay, to go into slavery full time, I think, without the possibility of parole. And I think that's the scenario that he's painting here, verses 9 through 11, kind of, maybe even 14. Lest you give your honor to others and your years to the merciless. So your honor, giving your honor to others, is the picture of going into slavery. Your years to the merciless. The merciless, we could say, maybe was the judge that this case of adultery was brought before. Strangers, take their fill of your strength, right? Young man working for under slavery for strangers, is the strangers are the ones who are reaping the benefits of his manual labor. Your labors go to the house of a foreigner, same concept there. And he says, this isn't going to go away, right? This is going to eat at you for the rest of your life. This is going to constantly, you know, this sin of adultery, right? It's going to constantly eat at you. At the end of your life, verse 11, you groan. And your flesh and body are consumed after years of that hard labor under slavery, and you say, oh, how I hated discipline in my heart, despised reproof. I didn't listen when I was told. It's deep regrets, isn't it? Deep regrets when this consumes someone. Verse 14. I'm at the brink of utter ruin in the assembled congregation. The congregation was the whole people of Israel. He's at the brink of ruin. He's ruined. He has no status, no honor in the community. This is the trajectory of sexual sin, isn't it? Right? As we'll see, he's going to hold up the glory and the blessings of marriage, verses 15 through 19. But this is the route that an individual takes. But it's also, I think we could say, it's a route that a community takes as well, a society, right? As we throw off God-ordained sexuality, right, between a man and a woman, a husband and a wife, everything just degenerates, right? I mean, what would slavery have to do with committing adultery, right? It's two consenting adults, and you end up losing in the end significantly. And isn't that kind of also how our society has gone as well, right? Do you think maybe there's a correlation between what, no fault divorce back whenever that was? I don't know when that came about. Would that have been in the 60s or 70s, maybe? No. Maybe before that, I don't know. no-fault divorce, and then the free love of the 60s and 70s, and homosexuality increasing and kind of making some little bit of headway in the 80s, and now where we're at now. I mean, isn't there slavery that we're under? I mean, Trump keeps talking about China, right? God has created this to be upheld and enjoyed and gloried in, marriage. Verse 15, drink water from your own cistern, flowing water from your own well. Of course, these are metaphors, as in be content with the wife that you have. There are analogies here. Should your springs be scattered, broad streams of water in the streets. And he points to what he's talking about here. Let your fountain, verse 18, be blessed, and rejoice in the wife of your youth. And he goes on, a lovely deer, a graceful doe. Let her breasts fill you at all times with delight. Be intoxicated always in her love. Isn't that what the man originally was seemingly looking for, right? Love, to be intoxicated, and to be blessed, and to be delighted. But God's telling us that, of course, he's made a way for that to happen, right? In marriage. And notice the contrast in verse 19 and 20. Why should you be intoxicated, my son, with a forbidden woman? So he uses that same word there, the end of verse 19. Be intoxicated always in her love, in the love of your wife. Why should you be intoxicated with a forbidden woman? It's two kinds of intoxication, isn't it? Two kinds of staggering, could be translated as. The good kind, right, with the one you're married to, through which you will be blessed, and you will be delighted, and you will rejoice, a good, happy kind of intoxication. But then there's also an intoxication that leads to one's own destruction with one who is not your own. and then he has a conclusion there. For a man's ways are before the eyes of the Lord. And he ponders all his paths. As in, you might be able to get away with this, humanly speaking, right? We'll see over in chapter 7, the father here, the author, gives this scenario where, oh, my husband isn't home. He won't be home for a month. You know, nobody's going to know. This is completely fine. And it may very well be that's the case. But the reality is that they're the eyes of the Lord are upon you, right? it's Walker Texas Ranger just popped into my head, so just have to let that one go. But God sees, he knows, right? So you may escape human punishment, but you can't escape his. The iniquities of the wicked ensnare him, and he's held fast in the cords of his sin. He dies for lack of discipline, and because of his great folly he is led astray. That's a heart-wrenching sin to be involved in. And the author's not saying here that if one commits adultery or is unfaithful in any sense, that forgiveness isn't an option. But there is a reality that the heart, the mind latches onto that in a kind of in a more significant way, it seems, than than some of the other sins that we have. And Paul kind of seconds that
over in was it 1 Corinthians, that if we sin in our body, we're sinning against, you know, the temple of the Holy Spirit. As we think about these things, in these couple chapters, I think we ought to think of them not just as gaining wisdom for ourselves, okay, but also I think we need to remember that this is an extremely important issue, that we don't often like to talk about, these kinds of sexual temptations, and it's very awkward to talk about them. It's probably very awkward to sit here and listen to them, but for all of you with grandkids, this is the message that they need to hear as well, right? This is a father speaking to his son, his sons. You know, some of you might think they're not getting it from the parents, possibly. Hopefully they are. But this is what our kids need to hear too, right? So as we come into this, take some pointers from this father as he speaks to his son in this way and about these things, and ask God to, you know, if you don't feel comfortable doing that with your grandkids, or if it's a super awkward for you, ask God to, which I totally get, ask God to direct you in that way, to give you courage and wisdom, in speaking to your grandkids or other, you know, kids, teenagers, young adults, that you're involved with. Because this is such a terrible reality, right? And it's not, you know, the picture that he paints in the beginning and then at the end of chapter 7 of this monster. This monster lives in everybody's phone, doesn't it? And it's not, you know, oh, avoid that corner or that house anymore. No, this same monster lives in your pocket, right? And in the pocket of your 10-year-old, and sometimes even worse, your younger. So this is a conversation that needs to be had, and we need to do it biblically and wisely. It needs to be said. And then he moves into, probably just to give his kid a break here before he gets into it again, chapter 6, for other kind of miscellaneous teachings, legal entanglements, laziness, conspirators, and then the Old Testament Israel's seven deadly sins. So let's read these first 19 verses of chapter 6. My son, if you have put up security for your neighbor, have given your pledge for a stranger, if you are snared in the words of your mouth, caught in the words of your mouth, then do this, my son, and save yourself, for you have come into the hand of your neighbor. Right. So he's painting the picture here of my buddy has a debt, right? He just bought a new car, and they're coming after him because he can't afford it. But so he asked me to lend him some money. So I lend him some money, right? And now he's not paying me back. Or worse yet, I co-signed on the loan for him. You know, he was in a hard time. You know, I'm confident that he'll come around. dad's not so confident, right? He knows how this works. So he says, if this happens to you, you come into the hand of your neighbor, end of verse 3, go hasten and plead urgently with him, with your neighbor. Give your eyes no sleep and your eyelids no slumber. Save yourself like a gazelle from the hand of the hunter, like a bird from the hand of the fowler. So wisely the father says, if you happen to be dumb enough to do something like this and it backfires on you, right, get out of it as fast as you can. Don't sleep. Don't slumber. Don't be lazy in correcting the errors that we make. And oh, by the way, verse 6, don't be lazy at all. Go to the ant, O sluggard. Consider his ways and be wise. Without having any chief, officer, or ruler, she prepares her bread in summer and gathers her food in harvest. How long will you lie there, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come upon you like a robber, and want like an armed man. A warning to the lazy, right? Don't do it, right? And it is amazing that when you think about an ant, they just keep going, right? A little thing like that probably eats hardly anything. And they don't ever stop. Nobody tells them that they're going to need to get food, right? But that's what they do. They get food. So he says we ought to be the same way. Conspirator, verse 12. A worthless person, a wicked man, goes about with crooked speech, winks with his eyes, signals with his feet, points with his finger, with perverted heart, desires evil, continually sowing discord. Therefore calamity will come upon him suddenly. In a moment he will be broken beyond healing. So this worthless person, actually it's the same as Beelzebul, an Old Testament kind of metaphorical name for Satan. Baal is in there. Beelzebul. Is worthless, right? There is no sense hanging around this person, and he's wicked, right? He's not just worthless, but he's wicked. He's evil, and he goes about with crooked speech, winks his eyes, right? Hey, why don't you come and join me? Why don't you come and join me? He says, "Don't," right? He will be broken beyond healing. And then the seven deadly sins here, right? You know, the Catholic Church has the seven deadly sins. It's interesting. They actually didn't get that, at least from Proverbs. I'm sure they have backup somewhere for it. But verse 16. There are six things that the Lord hates, seven that are an abomination to him. It's a literary thing. Proverbs does that several times. It's like, you know, six things that the Lord hates. Seven. Wait, did he lose count the first time? Or, you know, is he a good preacher and just tack something on at the end? I don't know. It's some kind of memory thing, probably some kind of literary device. But six things the Lord hates, seven that are an abomination to him. First, haughty eyes. Second, a lying tongue. Hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that make haste to run to evil, a false witness who breathes out lies, and one who sows discord among brothers. So is there any connection there that you guys see in that, in those? What's the connection here?
To the body.
Yeah, they're all body parts. Haughty eyes is being arrogant, right? Prideful. They're lifted up. It's the attitude of the heart. And it's not just with other people, right? But it's a pride haughty eyes, self-righteousness with God, right? And Jesus says, blessed are the meek. Blessed are the meek, right? God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. So pride is the first one here. That actually, I think that does correspond with what the Catholics said about seven deadly sins. But anyway, then a lying tongue. Okay? Not just one who tells lies, or someone who's, is deceptive from time to time. But a lying tongue, I think the picture there is someone who doesn't care about the truth at all. Right? Someone who doesn't care. And that's interesting, right? When we think about pride and what's currently labeled as pride in our culture, which is the first thing that the Lord hates. Can you have a conversation with somebody who, like transgender sort of homosexual sort of things, about truth? No, you can't, right? They don't care about truth. Feet. Oh, wait, no. Hands that shed innocent blood. It's some kind of a, not just murderers per se, although that's part of it, but someone who has a violent personality, right? A lack of control over their anger, a zero value or regard for human life. That's also front and center in our culture as well. A heart that devises wicked plans. It's actually interesting, the commentary that I was using, he went through and stuck, like, what would it be, psychological pathologies onto each one of these. I forget what they all were. This one was, I think I have it here somewhere. Okay, sociopathic personality. Heart that devises wicked plans. Just has to do evil all the time. Like malignant, malevolent is the word, sort of stuff. feet that rush to do evil. Just being enthusiastic for opportunities to do wrong. They have no regard for sin, for obedience. It's just, if there's an opportunity to do something that they shouldn't, they're sprinting at it. And then finally, a false witness who breathes out lies. One who sows discord among brothers. So these are all sins of the heart. Well, I guess every sin is sin of the heart. But it's not, they're not necessarily like physical. this is what the Lord hates. And then he picks up in verse 20 with the second warning against adultery. He has an opening appeal, a long one, and then he breaks and moves into something, a different picture in chapter 7. So the end of chapter 6, verse 20. My son, keep your father's commandment and forsake not your mother's teaching. Bind them on your heart always. Tie them around your neck. And again there, forsake not your father's command, or keep your father's commandment, right? Fathers and mothers, we have to give that commandment for them to be able to keep it. Or for us to be able to say that. Okay. Bind them around your heart always. Tie them around your neck. We've seen that picture before. When you walk, they will lead you. When you lie down, they will watch over you. And when you awake, they will talk with you. For the commandment is a lamp, and the teaching a light. And the reproofs of discipline are the way of life, to preserve you from the evil woman, from the smooth tongue of the adulteress. So he's saying here that these wisdom, right? Keeping this is a guard. It's like, if you get this, right, it's going to guard you against this evil woman. Okay? It's not something that's going to just surprise you and shock you and totally leave you ill-equipped when the time comes. When that moment of the monster showing up in your life shows up. But this will preserve you from the evil woman and from the smooth tongue of the adulteress. You'll be able to see her appeals and to counter them with reality and with truth and with a confidence that, no, the Lord has given you all that you need. Verse 25, here's the warning. Do not desire her beauty in your heart, and do not let her capture you with her eyelashes. For the price of a prostitute is only a loaf of bread, but a married woman hunts down a precious life. Can a man carry fire next to his chest and his clothes not be burned? Or can one walk on hot coals and his feet not be scorched? So is he who goes in to his neighbor's wife. None who touches her will go unpunished. People do not despise a thief if he steals to satisfy his appetite when he is hungry, but if he is caught, he will pay sevenfold. He will give all the goods of his house. He who commits adultery lacks sense. He who does it destroys himself. He will get wounds and dishonor, and his disgrace will not be wiped away. For jealousy makes a man furious, and he will not spare when he takes revenge. He will accept no compensation. He will refuse, though you multiply gifts. So verse 25, isn't this the exact same thing that James says, right? Desire. Sin is wrong desire. And then when desire gives way, so comes the sin. So this sin of adultery, this sexual sin, the desire has to be rejected, right? The desire has to be rejected. Not the desire, the physical desire, but the desire for another. And of course, probably the biggest temptation is her eyelashes. Right. But that's a saying, right? Like, bat your eyelashes. But she batted her eyelashes at you or whatever. That's what gets Bambi, I think. And Feline, right? Is it Feline? You saw more than I did. I don't like Bambi. The movie, that is. And then he says something interesting here. Verse 26. For the price of a prostitute is only a loaf of bread, but a married woman hunts down a precious life. Now, there's some uncertainties in the original here, and I think it can be taken two ways. Like, what exactly is he getting at here? And he could be saying the price of a prostitute is cheap in the beginning, right? It's only a loaf of bread. But once you go through, she's going to hunt you down, right? As in, like, that encounter is going to kill you. It's cheap in the beginning, but it's ultimately deadly. The other option is, and I think this one makes more sense in the context, because he says down in verse 9, so is he who goes into his neighbor's wife. So he's speaking, okay, of a woman the adulteress is a woman who's married, right? Whereas a prostitute wouldn't be someone who's married. So I think he's making a comparison here between a prostitute and a married woman, and he's seeing them as they're two different people in this or two different kinds of people in this passage. So he's I think he's saying compared to a prostitute, right? I'm like the father's telling him to avoid all of this stuff, but I think especially a woman who's married, right? And we'll see that pan out more at the end of this chapter as well. So compared to a prostitute, right, you just got to give up, you know, a meager kind of payment, comparatively speaking. But if you go with a married woman, right, your life is over. The payment ultimately is going to cost you the rest of your life. And that is much worse. And then these rhetorical questions here. Carry fire next to a chest and not get burned. Walk on hot coals and feet not get scorched. He says that's exactly what you're doing when you go into your neighbor's wife. None who touches her will go unpunished. And then he lists the punishments here in verses 30 and following. He draws the picture. People who despise a thief, people do not despise a thief if he steals to satisfy his appetite when he is hungry, right? So this is Aladdin who, I have five kids who are 8 and under. It's Aladdin who is homeless and he has no food and he goes in and steals the loaf of bread because he needs it, right? He's starving. He says, people get that, okay? People get that. There's a bit of compassion there to satisfy his appetite when he's hungry. But still, right, the guards went after Aladdin because he stole the bread. And they chased him all over the place. Verse 31, if he's caught, he will pay sevenfold. He will give all the goods of his house. Okay? So although there's that compassion there, he's still going to have to pay the price. And the father's making the point here, is not so with the adulterer. Right? People will despise him. He will be disgraced, and he will constantly be in fear for his life. Verse 32, he lacks sense, he destroys himself. And he will get wounds, and dishonor and disgrace will not be wiped away. People can be merciful and considerate with a man who's hungry, but not with someone who goes after another man's wife. Then he speaks about the husband of the wife in verse 34. For jealousy makes a man furious, and he will not spare when he takes revenge. Right? So you're going to be dishonored. This is going to grieve you for the rest of your life. And not only that, you're constantly going to have a target on your back for, could be the worst of the worst, or, you know, or a life of utter pain and ruin. This husband will not accept no compensation, refuse, though you multiply gifts, it doesn't matter what you do, it doesn't matter how many times you apologize or how much you give, it ain't gonna satisfy. So going into the immoral woman is the quintessential act of self-destruction. And he continues, chapter 7. My son, keep my words and treasure up my commandments with you. Keep my commandments and live. Keep my teaching as the apple of your eye. Bind them on your fingers. Write them on the tablet of your heart. Say to wisdom, you are my sister, and call insight your intimate friend. to keep you from the forbidden woman, from the adulteress with her smooth words. So in this appeal, he has two women, right? Wisdom, who he's saying is like your sister, right? Love wisdom, okay? Love this woman, wisdom, okay? That's the one you need to embrace. And as you do that, you will be. She will guard you, protect you from the adulterous woman. Verse 6, for at the window of my house. Now he gets into a story the father gets into a story here, an illustration. For at the window of my house I have looked out through my lattice, and I have seen among the simple, I have perceived among the youths, a young man lacking sense, passing along the street near her corner, taking the road to her house in the twilight, in the evening, at the time of night and darkness. Behold, the woman meets him, dressed as a prostitute, wily of heart. She is loud and wayward. Her feet do not stay at home. Now in the street, now in the market, and at every corner she lies in wait. There again, the hunter and not the victim. She seizes him and kisses him, and with bold face she says to him, I had to offer sacrifices, and today I have paid my vows. So now I have come out to meet you, to seek you eagerly, and I have found you. I have spread my couch with coverings, colored linens from Egyptian linen. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love till morning. Let us delight ourselves with love, for my husband is not at home. He has gone on a long journey. He took a bag of money with him. At full moon he will come home. With much seductive speech she persuades him. With her smooth talk she compels him. All at once he follows her, as an ox goes to the slaughter, or as a stag is caught fast, till an arrow pierces its liver. As a bird rushes into a snare, he does not know that it will cost him his life. And now, O sons, listen to me, and be attentive to the words of my mouth. Let not your heart turn aside toward to her ways. Do not stray into her paths. For many a victim she has laid low, and all her slain are like a mighty mighty throng. Her house is the way to Sheol, going down to the chambers of death. So this drama of seduction that the father lays out here, he's making it something real to the son. It's not just theoretical anymore. But he's saying that he's seen this happen, and he's giving an illustration of what the smooth talk and flattery from chapter 5, what he means by that, when with her lips like, what exactly was that? Lips drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil. He illustrates what that may look like. And the just another textual note here, verse 14, there's some questions about that as well, exactly how the words are ordered and what they're saying. I had to offer sacrifices today, she said, and I paid my vows. So now she comes out to meet. So the question is either that she made the offering, and so as she made the offering, then she would have a feast prepared because of the lamb or the bull or whatever that was slaughtered. So now she has a feast prepared, right? That would be a lot of extra enticement for a young man, you know, a good meal, or because she says in verse 20 that her husband took the bag of money with him, it could be that she hasn't paid the vow, but she needs to pay the vow, and so she's out on the prowl looking for her way to earn some money. So this textual question there, not sure you know, which one that could be, but even with these textual variations, it's not doing anything to the point of the passage, is it? It's just kind of adjusting the story one way or the other. But the point of it is that whatever he's giving, it's a small price to pay for a night of love, but ultimately at the end he's about to pay the full price for his services as he goes into her, which ultimately is his life. Verse 22, he follows her, and just as an ox will go to the slaughter, or a stag caught fast till an arrow pierces its liver. I wish my stags were caught fast. That would be nice. And then he finishes with the conclusion. And he pictures again this monster, right, who is completely beautiful in one sense, but a kind of Jekyll and Hyde sort of thing. Her beauty masks a horrendous interior. Many a victim she has laid low. On all her slain are a mighty throng. It's like this, you know, her lips are not dripping honey anymore, but her canines are dripping blood, and you see all these, you know, picture all these bodies of young men who are surrounding her cave. And her door, actually her house, is like the portal, he says in verse 27, like, when you're ready to go to the grave, that's where you go, right? This is your entrance into the chambers of death. So there's a monster behind that beautiful exterior. So what are your thoughts or questions here?
Surely has, how can I say, really portrayed this adulterous woman in many ways as an enticement to the young.
Yeah.
But I think, I mean, this is all talking about a son and stuff. Girls aren't excited, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
No. No, that's very true. Yeah, when we, I think it becomes, or it's becomes more clear too when we, you know, we take it on a personal kind of an individual level. But to translate it also to that cultural level, you know, we see that, and that's what that kind of downward spiral, that where the sexual deviance is like the door or the beginning to death. Paul in Romans 1, right, that God gave them over, and God gave them over to a depraved mind, to their passions, and where men did what was contrary to nature and forsook their relationship with women and went after other men, and women did the same thing. It's Yeah, and it's not it's not in, it's probably probably the adulteresses that are the most forefront are not ones in flesh and blood, right? But they're ones on a screen. I forget what these statistics are, but it's some astronomical amount of percentage of men that look at pornography. I want to say it's like 90% from what I heard. I could be, maybe it was between certain ages or something, I don't know. And then the percentage for women wasn't significantly lower. It's been a long time and those statistics are fuzzy. But yeah, there's many who say, and even right now there's a number of personalities that are speaking out about it, that who aren't even some who aren't even Christians per se, about the dangers, you know, basically what these three chapters in Proverbs are basically saying the same thing, like it steals your manhood in a way and makes you complacent and lots of different issues there. So
is there any relationship between this type of thing described here and what we're seeing right now? I just saw this today and I had seen before, but where the Catholic Church is now considering, especially for the church in Europe, and where they're considering changing their position on LGBT, and it looks as though the Pope is actually going to maybe change their status.
Mm. It could be. From what I understand, this Pope is quite liberal. So I wouldn't be surprised. But yeah, I mean, that's the trajectory, isn't it? You reject God, okay? You fall into sexual sin of some sense, and that is kind of like that's how it goes. That's the trajectory. You can pick out all the things that the Father says here. You lose your honor, you know, you're disgraced. This, you know, and when, what was it, Uganda or something, that some American went over there or whatever, they were trying to push something in Africa about this LGBTQ stuff, and they basically, you know, the Africans like shut them up. Like, this is ridiculous, you know, they were disgraced. I think you can make connections there with the slavery that he talked about, giving your strength to others. How many weapons do we give to Ukraine? Like, are we, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not super following much of that, but I heard, like, we've given them so much, we would have a hard time defending ourselves if something happened. you know, and it just leads to all kinds of other issues. So yeah, because of that rebellion, and it's for the wrath of God is being revealed. It's, yeah. And I would probably bet that, like, the rise and fall of nations and, you know, nations throughout history, I would probably be willing to bet that some kind of sexual perversions were part of that. I know, I'm pretty sure it was for Rome, you know, but some other ones.
Well, you can go back to the city of Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's very true. So. All right. And Tom, would you close in prayer?
Lord, thank you for this day, Lord. Thank you for your word, Lord. As we study Proverbs, Lord, and we study some things that are very difficult, very hard, Lord, and but very important to understand, and especially as we have children and grandchildren, Lord, and help us to be able to apply it in our own lives, and help us to be willing to be able to share the truths with others that come into our lives, Father. And thank you for this day. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.